the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yeah, that's right. It is time once again. We welcome you back. It's another edition of Bucket Strategy Investing. We got more of the best in money information just ahead. We're going to try to top ourselves. It's been a heck of a good week for us. Great calls all week. So keep up the good work on the part of viewers and listeners, if I can say that to you. The Brain Trust is here in the form of Professor Rick Plum, who joins me. I'm Johnny Dean, again, from Lucia Capital Group. Now, we're going to start things off this hour with a discussion on incorporating a business and how you might go about doing that. Should you even go about doing this? You've heard that perhaps forming a corporation is the be-all, it's the end-all, the ultimate protector of everything you own, and the defender against everything you do. Well, why not? That's how they're often presented. Now, reality, of course, is far different. Incorporating does often have a place for a business owner, but there are things that you need to know. You got taxes. If you're the only person working in the business, don't look for so much protection on it. So we're going to tell you all this stuff coming up on the program in just a bit. Now, the best part of all this is you can give us a call right now with your money questions. Phone lines are open, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. That's 877-752-6637. You can also head over to wealthed.com, send us an email, click on the Find Your Answer link near the top of the page. Click on that, ask a question, type it in, and send it to us. Either way, you're going to reach the Brain Trust right here in the studio. Now, Professor Rick Plum joins me from Lucia Capital Group once again. I should tell you, you need to get a strategy that addresses all of your needs, one that aims to make sure that your retirement goals are covered right the first time. That's the goal. You call our advisory team at Lucia Capital Group, talk to Professor Plum or any of the advisors there at this number off the air, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. What you need is a bucket strategy. Can I tell you that? Sure. And the Brain Trust advisors are going to put one together for you. You can talk to any of them about your financial future. Give yourself, we hope, some peace of mind. 800-644-1150, off the air. Our number here, on the air, in studio, that's the important one right now, 877-PLANNER. We got lines open. So if you have a money question on anything at all, business owners, give us a call. If it's on, of course, Social Security, we take a lot of those calls. Insurance, products, annuities, retirement, saving for college. We talk about all of it right here. All right, now, Professor Plum, I had my own business for many years, a production type business, and I incorporated, but you know, I think if it hadn't really been explained to me, I never would have even thought about it. A lot of small business owners out there. I guess the first question we should ask is, how do you know if it's even right for you to go into this whole idea of incorporating?
Well, there's lots of different levels, and there's a couple different reasons for doing what you're thinking about doing. Now, there's basically four ways to run a business. A very simplistic, easy way to do it is the self-employed business, where you just kind of hang a shingle out like the old days, and I'm now in business. Come and, you know, consult with me or buy whatever product that I'm buying. I don't really go through any formalized issue. I keep track of what I pay for the whatever widget I'm making. I keep track of the income coming in. I keep track of my expenses for my office, for whatever I'm doing, and I just reconcile everything. Here's the money coming in. Here's what it costs to go out. Bottom line is I did or did not make a profit. And that is either a taxable event, if I made a profit, or I got a loss this year because I lost money this year. That's self-employed, sole proprietor is the first step in business. And it's for somebody who just, like a one-man shop, just doing something, who doesn't want to get too carried away with things. But there's also other ways to form your business. One is an LLC. That's a limited liability company. And as the name might suggest, the reason you would do an LLC is liability. If I have a business that creates a liability to me, not me creating a liability for me, but a business, employees or other things, and I can try to shelter that liability, I don't get that liability protection with a self-employed industry. With a self-employed business, I am the business is me. There's no separation between my personal and my business assets. We are all the same thing.
So if I'm an electrician or something, and I'm the one, I go into people's homes or wherever, and I'm the
one who's sole proprietor
fixing the panel, and I'm a sole proprietor, it's my own business. I ride around in my own truck, and I just go in and do this, all the work myself. There's nothing protecting me.
Everything that you own is on the line. And so if anything gets screwed up, there could be a problem. Now, if you screw it up, I don't know, you could be a corporation. This is where the miscommunication for a lot of things comes in. You can be a corporation. You can be an LLC. You could be any entity, any business entity out there. If you're the one that goes in and repairs the electrical panel, and then somebody comes by later and just happens to walk by the electrical panel, steps in some water, and electricity just goes, coursing through their veins.
Or any number of things happen. Yeah.
And they get hurt because of something you did. No corporation in the world is going to protect you because you're the one that did it. Now, if I'm the business owner and I sent John Dean out, assuming he was properly trained and everything, and I didn't just send out some, crazy person, John Dean's a qualified electrician. He goes out and he screws up and they sue him and he does something wrong. If I'm a self-employed individual, they're going to come after the business. They're going to sue John because he did the wrong thing. But they're coming after the business too. And the business is me because I'm self-employed. I'm going to get sued for everything that I have, all my personal assets, all these other things. So, but if I have a company, this is where an LLC or corporation comes in. If I'm incorporated or if I have an LLC, which is not the same as incorporating, it's a limited liability company, when they go after John, yes, they're going to go after John because he's the one that did the negligent act or created the problem, whatever you want to look at. And now they also are going to look for the deeper pocket, which is the business. They're going to sue my business. And my business assets are on the line because the business did the work. John is just a tool of the business. But my personal assets, because I'm not the one responsible, they can't sue me. They can't go after my personal assets. It creates a line that says business is business, personal is personal. And as long as I'm not the one that did the negligent act, they can only go after John and the business assets. So depending upon what you want to achieve, there's the LLC or there's a corporation. An LLC is, as the name says, a limited liability. It is only a liability play. If I'm a self-employed individual and I want to try to protect myself from employees or other issues that I really have no control over, I want to create just the liability side of it. I can do the LLC, but I still treat it from a tax standpoint as a sole proprietor. In fact, if I'm a single member LLC, meaning I'm the only owner, I don't even file a separate return. I still file the exact same tax return as I do if I'm a self-employed individual. It's just that the name is a little different and the liability is different. If I want to make some kind of a tax play, I have to do something else. LLCs are purely for liability protection. Now, where we see liabilities limited liability companies, LLCs the most, are in ownership of real estate now or a second side job. And there's some tax reasons for that. But businesses, typically, if they want to start limiting liabilities, they make the next step and they go all the way to the corporation. Now, there's two types of corporations, a full-on corporation, which is known as a C corporation, or an S corp, subchapter S. It's for smaller businesses, generally for the small businesses we're going to be talking about. An S corp is what we're looking at. And it basically separates that owner of the business. Before I said, when you're a sole proprietor, you are the business is you, everything about the business is the same as the person, and everything's the same. When you create a corporation, you are no longer the business is you. You are two things. You are a business owner, and you are an employee of a business. So you can separate your two sides of the equation. You're a business owner, that has one set of issues, and you're an employee. And employees get paid a salary. They don't get profit from a business. Only owners get profit of a business.
Even though you're the same person, though.
You are, but you're serving two functions. And the tax rules are going to treat you as two different issues. So the employee gets a salary, whatever that reasonable salary is. And then it becomes a business expense. So we still have all the gross revenues coming in. We still have the same business expenses we had before. Office expense, telephone, car, whatever the case may be. Whatever was a deductible expense for a business is a deductible expense whether you're a self-employed individual or a corporation. Now we're looking at, we got all the income coming in, salary, which a self-employed person doesn't have for themselves, only for other employees. You're an employee, so salary comes off the top and it reduces the profit for the business. And then whatever is left, from a profit standpoint, goes to the owner. And so it's just it changes the character of the income into two different types of income. With a self-employed income, it's all business income. Whatever the profit is all business income. And that means it's all subject to the Social Security tax. With an S-Corp, it's employee salary, I'm the employee, and it's owner profit, I just happen to be the owner. Salary is subject to self-employment tax. Profit is not. And so that we can potentially make some tax plans, saving one of the biggest taxes that a normal small business owner pays, FICA, self-employment tax, we may be able to save some money there.
Yeah, we'll talk about that when we come back. If you're a small business owner, you own a business, and you're thinking about incorporating, there can be some tax benefits, although you got to be careful and you got to do it right. That's what we're going to talk about when we come back. Anything else is on your mind? 877-PLANNER. Lines are open. Call now with your money questions. It's Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. It is Johnny Dean. It is Professor Rick Plum. And it's you, too. We need you to call 877-PLANNER if you have a money question. 877-752-6637. Brain Trust is here to answer those money questions right here live on your TV and radio sets. We've got a lot of stuff to come, including some more emails. We'll try to get to some of those this hour if possible. If you want to email us, our website, wealtheed.com, W-E-A-L-T-H. wealtheed.com. 877-PLANNER is our number, though, right here in the studio. All right, so we were talking about S-Corps. The reason a lot of people want to perhaps incorporate their business, maybe not so much from a liability standpoint, although there are those issues, but more from a tax standpoint.
Right, now, there's two reasons to do something other than a sole proprietor. One is the liability, and if you have employees, you don't want to be a self-employed individual. You want to protect yourself from them. But from a tax standpoint, that's another reason to potentially move into the incorporated world, to try to save on taxes. How do you do that? Well, one of the biggest taxes that the average small business pays is the self-employment tax.
And what is that? Explain what that is.
Well, it's your Social Security tax. It's, you know, as an employee, we pay FICA. FICA is 6.2% of what we make, our salary, plus some Medicare tax. So combined, 7.65%. of the first $118,000 we make. That's only half of it, though. Our employer pays that as well. Whatever we pay, they pay. So really, that's 15.3% of our wages are being paid to the government, to the Social Security and the Medicare trust funds, for self-employment tax, Social Security tax. And as a self-employed individual, where you are the business and the business is you, you get to pay both sides. So you're paying 15.3% of the first $118,000. So if in my business, as a married, let's say I'm a married individual, have a stay-at-home spouse, I make $118,500. That's my profit after all my deductions, after my cost of goods sold, after my office expense and all the other things. I have a profit of $118,500. I get to pay 15.3% of that in self-employment tax, roughly. I mean, there's a minor adjustment in there. So that's a pretty good size number. Now I take that 118 and put it on my tax return, and I get to reduce that 118 by my itemized or my standard deduction. I get to reduce it by my personal exemption. So I may only be paying income taxes on 100,000, 95,000 of it. And of that 95,000, about 20, you know, some of it's in the 10% bracket, some of it's in the 15% bracket. So my average bracket on my 118,000 of profit from my business from an income standard tax standpoint is maybe 11 or 12%. But I still paid 15% in Social Security tax. So for a lot of people, that Social Security tax is the biggest tax they pay. And it hurts. I mean, that's a big number. If you're a sole proprietor, you make 100 grand, you're paying $15,000 in self-employment tax.
Well, and this is because as a self-employed individual, you, let's just say you're the only person, all right?
Right.
And you are the S corporation. You're the
C corp. You're a self-employed person.
You're self-employed. Okay, yeah. And so you're the employee.
Right.
And you're also the employer.
It's 100% profit to you, and 100% of it is considered earned income from your labor. And the earned income from your labor, you get to pay Social Security tax on. Now, if that same individual took that business and incorporated it, and now they are two people, they've got different personalities. And from an IRS and Social Security standpoint, they are two different people. They're an employee and they are the employer. And we could rationalize a reasonable salary. I could pay somebody, you know, $50,000 to do what I do in the business. That $50,000 is salary, and it is subject to the Social Security tax. So I do have to pay the 15% between the corporation and the individual on that $50,000. But the other amount of it is profit. And that profit, well, it's still ordinary income. It's taxed either way. I don't have to pay Social Security tax. And if I can reduce the amount of Social Security tax I pay, that's real money in my pocket, right? Now, it ultimately, down the line, will reduce your benefit a little bit. But it's a matter of where are your priorities?
So what you're saying is that somebody who, let's say that is $100,000, that's what they're making. If they paid themselves a $100,000 salary,
right,
then they would wind up paying, call it $15,000
plus.
Call it $15,000 between FICA and Medicare because they have the employee and the employer half.
Right.
So that's $15,000 that they have to pay just in that $100,000. Now, what they could do is, well,
I'm going to pay myself
a reasonable salary.
Of
and
60.
That's the key right there.
Yeah,
$60,000.
So I can reasonably pay somebody $60,000. So the employee side of my life gets $60,000 and the owner side gets $40,000. I still get $100,000. It's still the same $100,000 ordinary income from an income tax standpoint. The difference is only $60,000 of it in this category is going to be subject to the Medicare and Social Security tax. The other $40,000 is an owner, it's not from my labor, it's from my capital investment. It's from my ownership that I'm making money.
Yeah.
And they do differentiate between the two.
Well, what?
The work side of it and the ownership side.
So now instead of paying $15,000, I'm paying what? $9,000, call it.
Yeah, maybe.
On $60,000 salary, call it $9,000.
That's a pretty good tax savings. Now, what unfortunately some people will do is they say, well, if a little is good, a lot is better. So a lot of reduction in my salary. I'm going to pay myself $1,000 a month, and I'm only going to pay Social Security tax on that $12,000 a year. But my test on this, and it's not the same as the IRS's test, so make sure you actually deal with the IRS's test on this, but mine's not too far off, is would you work for $1,000 a month? You're not getting any of the profit. Would you do that job? Could you get anybody to do that job for $1,000 a month? And if your answer is, oh, heck no, then it's not reasonable.
And you're going to get hit if
you're going to get caught. And this is an area that the IRS does look for. They look for unreasonable salaries. Another area they look for it is somebody who is 62, has an S-corp. They've been paying themselves a salary of $100,000 a year for the past 5, 6, 7 years. And all of a sudden, this year, they pay themselves a salary of $15,720. And then the rest of it's profit. Now, why is that a big deal? Well, first off, is it reasonable? And whether it's reasonable or not, they're going to look at it and say, you did this for one reason only, so that you could get a Social Security benefit. So you could pass the retirement earnings test on the Social Security benefit side. So because you're not full retirement age, you can't earn more than $15,720. And yes, we have seen this where people will drop their salary right at age 62 so that they can get their Social Security benefit and still get the business and keep working. They can have both ideas. Unfortunately, the IRS is equipped to look for those areas. But it does make sense. So liability-wise, the limited liability company handles that, but it doesn't do anything from a tax standpoint. If you want the tax standpoint, you can use an S-corp for at least some of it. Now, one of the other advantages that an S-corp can give you is in the retirement planning area, from a business contribution to a retirement plan. If I'm going to do a SEP, I go back to my self-employed individual, I do a SEP. I make $100,000 a year, I put $20,000 into my SEP. It does reduce my income taxes, but it does not reduce my self-employment tax. I still have to pay tax on the $100,000, Social Security tax on the $100,000. If I incorporate, my SEP contribution is based on my salary, but I don't have to pay Social Security tax on the money that came out of the corporation to pay the SEP contribution.
Yeah, so there are all kinds of strategies. If you've got a small business or medium-sized business, you may have employees. Some ideas for you. We just gave them to you here. If you have any questions on this or anything else, 877-PLANNER is our number. We got lines open right now for you. 877-752-6637. Some emails coming up. as well. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum from Lucia Capital Group. We're here on Bucket Strategy Investing. Don't go away. Room on the phones. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER, 877-752-6637. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, the Brain Trust is here answering your money questions as we do every day. Now, we answer them here on the program. We also answer them off the program. And how do we do that? Well, we do that by going to where you are. That's right. At least as close to where you are as we can. We have some workshops coming up here, the 2016 Lucia... The 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshop brought to you by Lucia Capital Group. I knew I'd say it right. They're coming up here. Next one is going to be in February, the 20th of February. That's a Saturday morning in Las Vegas. So Las Vegas residents, Henderson, anywhere in Nevada, you show up in Las Vegas Saturday, February 20th. All the details are at WealthEd.com, W-E-A-L-T-H, WealthEd.com. Sign up. It's free. Meet Professor Plum. Meet Terry Keyes. Meet all the members of the Brain Trust there in Las Vegas. Talk about retirement income strategies and ask your money questions. That's the other important part of this. Ask your money questions because they will all be answered either during the program or right afterwards if you want to, you know, you can collar these guys. So that'll be Las Vegas, February 20th. Week after that, February 27th in Seattle, Washington, upper corner of the country, and then Saturday, March 12th, Phoenix, Arizona. Las Vegas, Seattle, and Phoenix, those are the next three. There will be more. After that, you check WealthEd.com for details. As I said, you sign up there. It's all free. Get your money questions answered and talk all about retirement income strategies. Speaking of retirement income, a lot of this has to do with, I mean, we do talk about it a lot. A lot of this has to do with Social Security.
Just a little confusing at times.
Well, it is, and I have an email which we're going to get. We're going to take a couple of calls here, but I have an email from Dick in Honolulu who sent this in just a couple of days ago, and there are several questions on here. I think what he wants to do, he can't do. We'll tell you about it in just a little bit, which may make the other questions that he had on this not necessarily relevant. So, but I'll let you decide that, all right? Again, if you want to email us, you go to wealthed.com, click on the Find Your Answer link. We will do this sometime here before the top of the hour. But let's get a couple calls. I know we had a couple people hang up during the news, so call us back. We have three lines open right now, 877-752-6637, spells out PLANNER. Vancouver, Washington, we go next to David. David, thanks for calling. How can we help you today?
Yes, I have a tax bill due in 2016, and I currently work for a county government in the state of Washington with a state-sponsored pension plan, mm-hmm. and I also contribute to a 457, also work-sponsored. I've already contributed close to $4,400 to that 457. Is there a way to add additional money to that this year to lower my tax bill for 2015?
No, the only way to get money into a 457 plan is through a salary deferral. And the salary that you're earning right now is 2016 salary. So doing it today will help your 2016 tax liability, but 2015 is closed out. You're done there. Now, are you married or single?
Married.
And how much income, household income, do you have?
Taxable income this year, or last year, is basically 100. It came to about 110 doing the tax prep.
Yeah, well, that means that you're over the limit for being able to do a deductible traditional IRA. Now, does your spouse work?
Yes.
Okay, and do they have a retirement plan at work?
Yes, but it's also the state.
That's fine. I'm just looking for, at this point, the only thing you can do from a retirement planning standpoint, if you're not self-employed, is a deductible traditional IRA, but you're over the limits for being able to do a deductible traditional IRA. So there's, at this point, no way to make a contribution to a retirement plan and get a tax deduction for a last tax year.
Okay. I was afraid of that.
Yeah, so that tells you that this year, if your income is going to be similar, start putting more into your 457 plan now.
Yes, we're currently doing that. And probably a little year end planning would probably have been due last year.
Right, but unfortunately, if you wanted to do your year end planning in December, unless you had another check coming that you could go into your HR department and they would react very quickly and say, withhold my entire check, it's hard to get money into a 457 plan when you don't have any more checks for the year, or a 401k, or a 403b, any salary deferral plan, and that's what these types of plans are. So now's the time to be planning for next year's
David's trying to lower his 2015. Professor Plum, is there anything? I know you asked a couple of questions, but is there anything that we're missing? Yes, David.
Oh, I was going to say, is there a way that I could go outside of my employer and start a separate plan and make a contribution? But I would have to keep that open I'd have to start a new one.
Well, first off, you would have had to have had a business that earned a profit in 2015. You don't have that.
Okay.
The other thing is, that's why I looked at an IRA, because an IRA you can do today, at least for another couple months, and still have account for last year. But you're over the threshold, you're in a qualified plan, your wife's in a qualified plan, you make more than the threshold, you can't do a deductible contribution to a traditional IRA. So I was looking for ways to do it. At this point, no, it's unfortunately, you're kind of locked in stone now.
Oh, that's fine. I was afraid of that, but that's perfectly fine.
But now's
a
good time.
Your help.
Now's a good time to plan for next year's tax liability. You get the 457 going now. It'll help you with your taxes for 2016, and it'll help you save some more money for retirement.
Thank you very much.
All right, David. Thank you for the call. You did the right thing. Call us to see, because you never know. There may be something.
I was looking for that IRA but they're making too much money.
Yeah, there's too much money there. You were asking about his wife.
Right, because he said they made about 110 taxable, which means they probably make 140, 150 overall gross. The threshold for a spousal IRA or for being able to put money into an IRA when you don't have a retirement plan, but somebody does. So Dave had the retirement plan. If his wife was working in a position where they did not have a retirement plan, at her employment, she could have done a deductible traditional IRA. But at $130,000, $140,000, $150,000, they make too much because they're both in plans. They can't do a deductible traditional IRA.
All right, well, if he winds up owing more than he wants to pay this year, he can maybe make up for it next year by deferring more.
Well, he would want to increase his 457 contribution, maybe her 401k or whatever contribution she has there, so that instead of making it up all in one check, like he might have had to do
it over the course of a year.
Do it over the years. Sure. Not as big of a deal.
Good time to do that. All right, 877-PLANNER. Let's see. Let's go to Jim next in St. Augustine, Florida. Hi, Jim.
How you guys doing?
Doing great. What's up? How can we help you today?
Okay, I'm about 4 years away from retirement, maybe 2 years away from semi, where I might just do what I want to do, a couple things. I have a plan with a financial advisor. We're working on the bucket system. The question that seems to come up for a guy in his mid-50s is this, and I think it'll help the audience, is what's the percentage of exposure should be to equities? And it seems like, minus from 100 or minus from your age or how long you think you're going to live. You guys shed some light on that for a guy 55. I'm about 52, maybe 55% equities today. I'm about 30% bonds, and obviously that's a struggle, but I'm doing it.
Yeah.
Short-term bonds, we talked about that last time I was on. And then I'm 25% cash right now because I'm just hesitant to where this market will drop. And when it does, I probably maybe go a little more into equities. Or would you back off being my age and you're this close? Love to hear what you have to say.
Well, Jim, I wouldn't back off being this age. I'd back off based on how much I need to draw from my portfolio in 4 years. The amount of money you need in equities or should have in equities isn't a function of your age so much as it is a function of how much distribution from the portfolio do I need to take and when. If you were 55 and you said, I'm not going to retire until 70, that's a different game. If you're 55 and you say, I'm retiring at 59 and a half, well, now we have to look at 59 and a half, you're too young for Social Security, your pension may or may not be there, how much money do you need to pull from the portfolio at that time to be able to live the way you want to live? And we back into how much money you can afford to have in equities. So this idea that you take 100 less your age to come up with the percentage in equities, that's bunk, because that assumes that every person at 55 has the same goals, has the same risk temperament, wants to retire at the same time. Everything's identical for every 55-year-old. That's not true. So rather than doing it that way, let's take a look at what you need. You're 55, you're going to retire, call it at 60. Let's make it easy math. How much do you need to live off of when you retire?
Yeah, it's going to be around $4,000. And that's if, you know, I'm going to be doing some other things where I probably make a couple thousand doing what I want to do. So let's say it's probably going to be $3,000 or $4,000 I need to pull out of a portfolio that's going to be somewhere next few years, say maybe near $1.4 million, $1.5 million.
Okay. So the first thing we're going to do is back into how much we need in the safer buckets to draw down.
Yeah,
even though you don't like them, you may need them.
I tell you what, okay, I know you're on a cell phone. Hang on a second, Jim, because I'm going to come back to you in just a couple of minutes. I want to have Professor Plum work a little bit of math here for you and give you a little bit more of an exact quantity here. So if you can hang on, we got to take a break. We're going to come back with more. Jim, we're going to do what we can to give you this, help you out with your plan when we come back. Still some room on the phones, 877-PLANNER. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum. We're back right after this. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, answering your questions. 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Emails, as soon as we can get to them, we'll try to get to at least one, perhaps before the top of the hour. But right now, we've got our callers on the line. Jim, thank you. Yes.
Still here.
St. Augustine. Thanks for hanging on, Jim. Okay, so, Professor, you did a little work here.
Right. The idea is to set yourself up so that 3, 4, 5 years from now, whenever it is that you want to retire, the money is there, available, ready to go, regardless of whether you've picked a good time or a bad time to retire in the market. Maybe the next 3 years are the 4 years are the greatest 4 years we've ever seen, or maybe they're a disaster and it's a downturn like we've never seen before. That should not be the deciding factor of whether or not you can retire in 2, 3, 4 years when you want to retire. So the idea, and I'm going to do a very simplistic buckets plan, there are ways to make it maybe a better, maybe a little more enhanced, but for right now, we're just talking about how much equity you should have. You want to have enough money in a very safe, low volatility account to draw the income you might need when you want it for a 6, 7, 8 year period of time. To do that today, you would want to shift roughly $250,000 to somewhere between $250,000 and $300,000 into an account. It's not going to earn much. It's kind of like that bond portfolio you might have, short duration. Maybe it earns 2%. I'd like to see a little bit more managed portfolio with some other things. But there's lots of things you could use for this period of time. There are fixed annuities that you could use, although you can't use them until you're 59 and a half because there's penalties if you take money out of them.
Right.
But there's lots. You want it to be there, regardless of what happens to the market. So you're willing to give up some of the upside potential to make sure you don't have any downside potential. But if you put the 300 there, you can take, you know, $4,000 a month out of that for the next 7 years. So you've built in a time horizon of 7 to 10 years now, because you're going to retire in a couple of years, for the next block of money, what we call bucket number two. And so the idea would be to take some money and put it in a bucket two, maybe another $300,000, so that it can reinvest, it can sit, it can have a little bit of volatility, but you don't need that money for 7 to 10 years. Now, over a 7 to 10 year holding period, you probably do better than what you do over a 3 or 4 year holding period, right? And so we don't have to take all the risk of the market, because we have had 10-year periods of time in the market where it didn't do very well. So we want to use a balanced portfolio or something else in the middle where we're reinvesting a lot of dividends, taking advantage of dollar cost averaging within the portfolio. If you put 300 there, it'll probably be worth 400 or 450 7 to 10 years from now, about the time the first bucket is running low on funds. And then you can start taking it, you know, basically you're going to take that money and refill bucket number one. And then you're going to draw down maybe an inflation indexed $55,000, $56,000, $60,000 a year for another 7 or 8 years. But by putting together bucket number one and bucket number two, we've identified how much money you can leave alone and have 15 to 20 year time horizon for that money. So that even if you do retire into a declining market, you don't have to sell anything that's down for a long time, and it has the ability to recover. We recovered from the 2000 downturn by 2007. Of course, it went down again in 2008, but we recovered by 2008 before the end of 2014, 13. We'd all recovered it. So as long as we have a long enough time horizon, we can do it. Now, in your percentages, you're not that far off. by what I was talking about, having 300,000 in buck 250, 300,000 in bucket number one, 250, 300,000 in bucket number two, the rest could be in equities. That's about the same percentages that you're dealing with right now.
Yeah, that's the money and risk.
Oh, he's breaking up.
One quick question to finish it. I really appreciate that methodology, by the way. Is what when someone has a real estate portfolio, let's say they have a half a million in equities, and let's say $500,000 in bonds and cash. So let's say it's a 1.5 net worth. But someone says, this is my exposure to equities. Does that include their personal real estate as well?
Depends on what the personal real estate is doing for them, whether they're going to sell it. Typically, if I've got a bunch of rentals and I'm going to keep those rentals and they're cash flowing, they're doing everything well, they're not speculative. I mean, I'm not upside down on them. I'm not feeding them cash flow-wise that they're cash flowing me. I'm going to treat them as more of an income stream, because most people that have done real estate like that don't want to sell it. They just want to, they've done it right, and they just want to turn it into an income stream. So I'm going to use that as an income stream. So let's say I'm getting 1,000, even in fairly negative circumstances, I'm getting 1,000 a month cash flow from that portion of my portfolio. I'm going to not include that as part of my investment portfolio. And instead of needing 4,000 a month from my portfolio, now I need 3,000 a month from the other portion of my portfolio. So in your case, if you had $500,000 in real estate, you have $1 million in other assets. That means instead of 4,000 from my portfolio, I'm going to reduce it by what I can get even in bad times from my real estate. And maybe I set my buckets up on the $1 million to give me 3,000 a month or something of that nature. So how we look at it depends on what you're doing with it. Some people say, you know what, once I get to retirement, I'm doing the management of it. But once I get to retirement, I want to travel. I don't want to be here to do the management. I want to sell these things. And so how you treat them is a different way. Now it becomes an asset again instead of an income stream. We have to look at what you could potentially net out of it after paying your taxes on selling it, and then build that into the portfolio that way.
Sounds great. Thanks so much for your advice.
No
Jim,
problem.
Thank you for the call. If you have any other questions or need some more help, please hold on, and Professor Plum will help you out a little bit more. But he's doing all right. I mean, you know, he was concerned when he first called, if you didn't hear it, about his equity allocation. He wasn't sure if maybe he should have been taking some of the cash that he has sitting there, moving that more into equities, or is it okay?
And so how he goes about treating his equities, I mean, he may be looking at this real estate as his equity position right now, because he's going to end up selling it. It doesn't act exactly like stocks, but it is a growth asset. But by having bucket one and bucket number two, he's got a time horizon of 10 or 15 plus years to be able to find a time that he feels inappropriate to sell it. He doesn't have to sell it right away. It just happened that when he needs to sell it, the market cratered. That's the problem.
And it happens.
It does, and it happens without asking your permission. And it happens at times that is, in many cases, very detrimental to your retirement life.
So I guess what he was asking was, can people consider real estate to be a portion of bucket three or what?
Well, again, it's how you're going to treat it. Are you going to treat it as an income source for the rest of your life? Some people buy and accumulate real estate and they never want to get out of it. Fine. But that's a different way to treat it. He, on the other hand, sounded like he was the latter category I was talking about, where he's going to want to travel, sell, and he doesn't want to be there to manage it.
Sure.
And so he's going to sell it off when he retires, or not too far after he retires. So now that comes back in, you treat it as more of an equity asset.
Yeah. I hadn't actually thought of it personally. I hadn't really considered it to be that way. I consider that as a sort of a subset of maybe bucket three or bucket
it
two or
be.
Wherever. Could even, I suppose, be a bucket one.
But very similar to what you say at the opening of the show. Everybody's different. Everybody's plan is different. And you need to understand what's going on in your life to get the plan set up for you.
Proof positive. I got a good email, in fact, from Vincent. We're going to get to that in another hour, so hold on. We got more to come. If you need the Brain Trust off the air, you talk to any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. Another hour is just ahead. Do not go away.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer member FINRA SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.